This hour of the Jason Rancho brought to you by Northwest Safe. There's a lot of news happening all around the world and right here at home. It's time to find out what's trending.
What's trending in Seattle?
I have a question, and it's kind of a goofy question. And it's a question that I already know the answer to. But does Jenny Durkin actually live in the city of Seattle? Like, I know she lives in the city of Seattle. I totally get that. But why does she talk about the city of Seattle in a way that basically indicates she's never been outside? Like, she doesn't walk around anywhere. She doesn't drive around anywhere. She goes from maybe insulated echo chambers to insulated echo chambers of everyone telling her there's nothing wrong with the city of Seattle. Because she has made a series of comments over the last few weeks that are just baffling to me. Totally baffling to me. So I was reading a Crosscut piece, and it was a piece about this unlikely possibility that the DNC choose to bring a debate to the Seattle area. And of course, that's not actually going to happen. No one thinks it's going to happen. I would love it to happen if we had a clean city, but the fact of the matter is we don't. We have a city that's ravaged by homelessness. But in this piece, and I guess I understand why someone like Jenny Durkin would like to talk up the city, but this seems a little dangerous because if people believe what it is she's saying and then come here and experience what the city has become, it's not going to be a good look for her. In this article, she's quoted as saying, "Having a debate in Seattle shows that Democrats can harness a booming economy, face the real challenges it creates, and have a vision for building an inclusive and just future." Okay. Having a debate here can show that Democrats can harness a booming economy. Okay. If Seattle, frankly, is a case study on how to run a city that the Democratic Party actually wants to run on, if that's the case study they want to use to show you the brilliance of their leadership, I would love for them to do that. Anyone who's a Republican should encourage this to happen, because that ensures Republicans are going to have victories all across the country. This is not a good example of how to run a city. Despite a booming economy, under Mayor Jenny Durkin, homelessness has gotten worse. We've seen an uptick in rape, in murder, in robbery, in property crime. Amazon, they're gradually ditching the city of Seattle, going to Bellevue. On top of that, housing costs are high. Regressive taxes are becoming more cumbersome to every single person who lives here. Traffic congestion seems out of control, and there's no indication whatsoever that any of these problems are actually being addressed. We talk about tackling homelessness, but the problem keeps getting worse and worse and worse, and I'm not hearing any innovative ideas. Are you? I'm not. I get paid to read the news, and I've seen nothing that's innovative coming from this city. Experts in the field routinely question these problems and how the city is addressing it. The loudest voices in the conversation tend to be the same exact people who failed many times over and over and over again. But now finally, the public is speaking out. A King County judge is calling out the city. This is happening under Jenny Durkin. Crime is getting worse. Crime is getting worse in large part because we have a Seattle City Attorney in Pete Holmes who's not interested in enforcing the law. You've got a police department filled with officers not being allowed to police. Amazon, which is actually responsible for that booming economy that Durkin is pretending that she helped harness. They just announced that they're leaving Seattle. What are their departments? Thousands of jobs are being relocated from Seattle to Bellevue. That is a city that actually appreciates business. That's a city that, unlike Seattle, chooses not to demonize businesses for every single thing that goes wrong. You'll recall, of course, that Amazon abandoned the Rainier Tower, one of the largest leases in Seattle history. Longtime businesses are leaving. Longtime businesses are ditching Seattle. Karen Dannenberg, who was the owner of a Seattle-based clothing store, she left because she was sick and tired of what the city was becoming thanks to the homeless crisis.
You know, the camps, the trash, the needles, the whole filth on the corner of Western and Blanchard, mm-hmm. Bell and Western. You know, I had to call the mayor's office constantly. I was on the news 3 different times. It just got really old, you know, having a PR and being associated with all the drugs and filth and the garbage on the streets. And it was time to either close my business or relocate.
Housing is still unaffordable. The only new idea is not a new idea at all. It's rent control. Traffic is still an issue. The only new idea is not a new idea at all. It's blocking the box legislation that allows them to ticket you and steal more of your money. Where exactly does Jenny Durkin live for her to be this out of touch? This is not a city in good enough shape to be put on a national stage with a debate. I wish I was wrong. Having a debate in Seattle would be amazing. But let's be clear, Mayor Durkin. This is not a case study for how to run a city. We're actually an example of how much an echo chamber of unchallenged ideologues can bring a great city to its knees and impact all the other amazing cities around it. Now, Durkin might actually know that if she got into the city that she pretends to govern. If you want to read this blog that I have on this very topic, please text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to the number 1-800-465-8770. I'll send you a link to my blog. Text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending on the campaign trail?
So, speaking of debates, the DNC is skipping debates on Fox News. Now, they still are having some town halls, the individual campaigns. Howard Schultz had it, but he's not a Democrat. Bernie Sanders just had one. It's the highest rated of the 2020 cycle so far, the highest rated town hall. Amy Klobuchar, the senator, just announced that she's agreed to do one. But the DNC doesn't want to put any people up there. So on Fox and Friends this morning, the hosts all touted the ratings of Fox and explaining why Democrats, hey, you should actually come here.
Now there's all these Democrats lining up to sit down with I assume would be Brett and Martha
again. Hold on, let me get this straight. So people want to come on the largest, most popular cable news channel to get their views out?
That
of all
doesn't that make total sense?
There are so many.
It always has. But keep in mind, I believe in the history of the Fox News channel, we have never hosted a Democratic debate ever on this channel. And that's why when Tom Perez came out and said, we're not going to work with Fox News, it's like, well, they haven't worked with us so far.
Well, there's so many independents.
But now some are saying, we got to go.
There's so many independents that watch. They're not smart right. If they don't come on Fox.
There's so many Democrats. So
Republicans have already decided who they're voting for. Democrats have already decided, but there's so many in the middle.
We are the number one cable news channel. If you want to get your word out, come on the channel.
I'm going to see if I'm going to correct you. Okay. Number one channel. Because we compete with ESPN, not just with MSNBC and CNN. So we beat the Cartoon Network and TNT.
So let's be clear about something. What the Democrats are doing here, the reason why they're saying no to Fox News is it is part of a bigger strategy, and it's a strategy all about trying to get rid of the Electoral College. They have an easier chance at winning the presidency by getting rid of the Electoral College. They do not want to visit Wisconsin or Michigan or North Dakota, South Dakota. They don't care about Utah. They don't care about Wyoming. They don't care about Alaska. They don't care about Kansas. They don't care about Oklahoma. They do not care about the places where a lot of Fox News viewers actually live. And so I'm not shocked that they want to get rid of any sort of even semblance of talking to the other side. They don't care about that. The Democratic Party, unfortunately, is leaning into this idea that an echo chamber is the best way to govern. That, of course, is the worst way to govern. That'd be awful for conservatives as well. You want to know what that looks like when you govern inside of an echo chamber? Come to Seattle. Go to LA. Go to San Francisco and New York. These are places that are having incredible problems. Incredible problems. Because they have echo chambers. No one is there to question them. That's where the Democratic Party, unfortunately, is going. And I say unfortunately because we're all better off. We're all better off by having an actual diversity of opinions being expressed. They don't want that. They don't care about you. If you're saying, oh, well, at least in Seattle we'll get some attention. No, you won't. Not if we get rid of the Electoral College. They don't care about Washington State. They come here only to get some money because a bunch of rich people live here. They care about California, Texas, Massachusetts, Florida, New York. They don't care about Washington State. Doesn't matter that Fox and Friends and the Fox News Network has the highest ratings of them all. They're not going after ratings. They're trying to ignore the people they disagree with. That's a shame. one 800 465 8770 is the NumBetter tax resolution hotline. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text. Producer Tom, let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending at home?
So a bill that would put Washington State on a year-round daylight saving time, which basically means we're not going to move ahead an hour, and then we're not going to move back an hour. It just means the time that we have is the time that we have. Well, that bill just passed the Senate in the state of Washington by an overwhelming majority, 46-2. Now, there was an amendment. It's a minor one, but it does force it to go back to the House, but it's expected to pass. Jay Inslee is expected to sign it. State Senator Sam Hunt, the Democrat from Olympia, he spoke on the Senate floor and said, hey, this is a state, this is an idea that's got a lot of states involved. This is an idea that has a lot of momentum.
We'll put us in line with California, hopefully with Oregon, and maybe even British Columbia will join us as we advocate for full daylight savings time, and would hope that with this unified approach on the West Coast that Congress will go with us. I know that the senator from Florida is pushing full daylight saving time, as are several other states, and hopefully we can keep this rolling and we'll get this accomplished in the next year or so.
So what's interesting about this is that there's an argument that making this change actually saves lives. And the point that they try to make is they say, hey, look, when it's darker earlier in the day, we're still out and about. So when it's dark at 4 o'clock, well, we're still going about our day. We're going out, we're walking places, we're getting in the car, we're commuting. And when it's dark, you have a higher likelihood of potentially getting into some kind of accident, which ends up hurting people. They have an argument in the Seattle Times, a data point, excuse me, that suggests 400 lives would be saved by this. I don't know if that's accurate. That part doesn't move me necessarily. I suppose I believe it, but if you told me that it's all hogwash, I'd probably say that too. They say on Seattle's shortest winter day, the sun rises around 8 a.m. and sets just after 4 p.m. So if this were to become permanent, that would mean the sun would rise at 9 a.m. and then it would set at 5 p.m. So you're still not getting, and that's on the shortest day, you're still not getting like a huge increase, but it's something. I'm just not that passionate about it. I will say this. I find it annoying to change the clocks and the timers on our watches or on, frankly, my stove or my microwave. Because I change them so infrequently, I never remember how to do it. And I end up turning on my stove accidentally and putting a timer on, and then I don't know how to turn it off. So then I got to wait till the timer goes off. And then on the microwave, I just hit random buttons and nothing happens.
I just get used to thinking an hour behind
or you
an
just
hour
fake
ahead.
It, right? Are you one of those people? Because for the longest time, I would do that until it was actually impacting my day-to-day schedule where I was like always thinking I'm late, but I'm not because I hate being late. That's the only part of this that bothers me. I tend to think we all make up an excuse why we hate it because, we don't get enough sleep. You weren't getting enough sleep beforehand. Changing the clock back didn't mean you got an extra hour of sleep. You just convinced yourself to stay up a little bit later than you normally would. So I just don't buy into the science behind this, nor do I buy into the people complaining about sort of the social aspects to it. But with that said, go ahead, make it permanent. Doesn't matter to me. We clearly have some momentum on our side because there are some states doing that. Just understand that Jay Inslee signing this means nothing. It has to go to Congress. Once it goes to Congress, they have to agree to allow us to do this. I don't know where that stands on issues of importance. Like, I don't know where that stands, how quickly they would take this up. But we'll see. If you're excited, send me a text, 1-800-465-8770. 1-800-465-8770. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Back the blue.
So waiting to see how quickly, right now, I'm waiting to see how quickly people will start to attack police officers in Grays Harbor. I'm waiting for them to come under fire for not being psychiatrists or psychologists, not being social workers, because they ended up shooting what we believe to be a mentally ill man. Except it was a mentally ill man that charged them with swords. I am of the position, and perhaps this is a controversial one, I'm not sure. When you rush towards a cop with swords, mentally ill or not, my expectation is that cop or cops, they're going to use their weapons. You will be shot. That's my expectation. And I think that should be your expectation as well. If you try to attack a police officer with a deadly weapon or weapons, you are going to die. That should be a safe assumption. I hope that means you stop thinking about doing something like this. But that's a fact. You are going to be shot. And that's what happened. Now, in this case, he wasn't killed, but he is facing life-threatening injuries. This all happened yesterday afternoon. At least it started in the afternoon because it ended in the evening. Started at about 2 p.m. Cops got some call about a suicidal man. So they arrive on the scene. They apparently try to talk to this guy. At one point, this man approached the officers with two swords. But the cops were able to retreat. The man went back into his home. And the conversation continued. This, according to Cairo 7 TV, they say he appeared to be having mental health issues. So they retreat. They call in a crisis response team to negotiate. Then later on in the evening, later on that night, despite all of the back and forth conversations going on, the dude yet again charges officers with the swords. This time he was shot. He was taken to Grays Harbor Community Hospital with life-threatening injuries. And we'll see where it goes from there. But usually when something like this happens, you hear the people out there, the critics of the cops who at every step of the way will criticize something that a cop does. They'll say, how dare you use this kind of lethal force, potentially lethal force against someone who's dealing with mental illness? Why aren't you trained to talk him down? Why don't you do something else? Why don't you give him a bear hug to have him drop the swords? Why don't you use a taser? Why don't you do something? You always hear those conversations. And that drives me nuts. That kind of criticism drives me absolutely nuts. Especially in a case like this where it's very clear that if you got a sword, you're going to be shot. This whole idea of, oh, if I was in that position, I would have done things differently. No, you wouldn't. You know how I know that? Because you're not a cop. Because you're not someone who puts on a uniform every single day and goes out into a community that you truly love and care about trying to help people. Running towards danger while everybody else is running away from it, you've never been in that actual position. And I have to assume that in a position like that, it's incredibly stressful where you're not able, as someone is barreling towards you with swords with the intent of killing you. And if this guy was suicidal, it's possible that he was trying to do something that would get him killed. You don't know what it's like to be in that position, and yet they speak with such confidence. So as of right now, luckily, we haven't heard them come after these cops. This wasn't the only shooting, by the way. It was an argument between neighbors in the city of Graham, and it was all over a blocked driveway. It ended up in gunfire. Our sister station, Cairo Radio's Jillian Raftery, has more.
The car had apparently been blocking the driveway on the man's rural property most of the day on Sunday. He kept asking his brother's friend to move it, but no luck. So, according to court documents obtained by the News Tribune, he took a skid steer tractor and scraped the car right down the road. The owner of that car ran out with a shotgun. Luckily, the gun jammed, the victim escaped on his tractor. The car's owner, not so lucky. He's facing assault charges.
Can I just say, this is one of those stories that reminds me why I don't have a gun? I would not be a responsible gun owner. Because something like this might actually trigger me.
Are you a sword owner?
Well, that I'm not going to talk about because I don't want to give too much information away. People are always attacking me and threatening me. I want them to at least have some level of fear that I'm not completely without a weapon to protect myself. But I don't have a gun, mostly because I think I would do something like this just out of anger. Because all people who work in radio, we're all crazy. We all acknowledge that we're all crazy. Just don't give me a gun.
I got my mind on swords, man. I'm thinking for you, maybe a cutlass would be the one for you. It's more of a shorter, easier, and close range. You know what you should do? You know what you should get?
What's that? A what?
A hilati.
What is that?
A hilati is the dual blade. You hold in the middle and the two ends.
Like
in
Avengers?
I'd recommend that.
Okay, that would be fun. But I feel like I'd stab myself.
Maybe a katana. That's the basic ninja one.
Now we're just, I don't, what kind of money do you think I make here that I can afford a katana?
Katanas aren't that expensive. Cutlass is.
Okay, well, we'll figure it out. We just got a text on the Numb Better Tax Resolution Hotline. Dude is in his car right now. It still shows up as 2:23 p.m. because he doesn't want to, or she doesn't want to change their clock radio. I love that. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show on AM 770 KTTH and streaming on all those smart speakers like Amazon Echo and Google Home. As more of us put pressure on the city to do something about the out-of-control homelessness, a lot of us in the media, all across the region, we received a suspicious press release from Pyramid Communications, and it painted a rosier picture of the problem than a lot of us actually experience actually living and walking around the city. My next guest, Christopher Rufo, writing for the City Journal, says this was actually part of a disinformation campaign. Chris Rufo joins me now. Chris, thank you so much for coming on.
Great to be with you.
So what did you find exactly?
So yeah, like many people, I was curious about this. It seemed like this press communication that was put out had just all of these blatant misstatements and some things that were just absolutely laughable, like one of the quotes was, Seattle is making progress to end homelessness and proven solutions are working. I think anyone who walks around the city of Seattle would say that proven solutions are not working and are actually unproven. So I dug a little bit deeper because it seemed like not only did this PR press release go out, but over the next few weeks after the Seattle is Dying documentary, I saw in all of the publications, in the Seattle Times, in Crosscut, on people's websites, on people's blogs, all of these articles attacking Seattle is Dying and defending the status quo. And it just seemed to me that there was something more behind this. And as I dug further, I realized that this was really a coordinated campaign involving all of the major players among Seattle's cultural and political elites.
Why? What's in it for, say, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, which is one of these organizations behind this email that went out?
Sure. Well, you know, I don't think it's something nefarious that people are colluding for private benefit. I think most of the folks are probably in it for the right reasons. But what you see is that, for example, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, the Reikes Foundation, the Campion Advocacy Fund, and the Ballmer Group are funding almost the entire cottage industry around homelessness. So they fund everything from academic programs at Seattle University to all of the main kind of media channels, specifically homelessness coverage at Seattle Times and at Crosscut. And they're also funding kind of advocacy, policy, and nonprofit groups. So there's kind of this insular world, and they're really highly attached to this worldview that what they're doing is working, that they are kind of bestowing their goodness upon the people of Seattle. And they felt like the Seattle is Dying documentary was such a devastating blow to their credibility. Keep in mind, these are folks who have essentially been in charge of homelessness policy for the past decade.
Exactly.
And they came back with just this huge level of defensiveness, trying to poke holes in it, trying to discredit Eric Johnson, the reporter, and trying to persuade the public something to not believe their own eyes, but to trust the experts because they know better than we do and they should still be in charge.
Well, and I generally say experts absolutely know better than we do. These are just really bad experts. They're not experts at all because as they've been in charge, to your point, over the last decade, homelessness has gotten worse. And we're to believe, according to this press release with the study, that one in four people experiencing homelessness in our community struggle with drug or alcohol abuse. I mean, these statistics are a little, it seems alarmingly wrong, but they'll say, hey, we've got the data to back it up. So did you actually dive into the data to see whether or not it was wrong?
I did, yeah. So the statistic they put out was one in four people experiencing homelessness suffer from drug and alcohol addiction. The data, though, since the 1990s from a landmark Urban Institute study all the way up into today, all the way, you know, to the most recent studies show that in Seattle, 50% of the people who are homeless are addicted to opioids. And you have another 30% or so addicted to alcohol, methamphetamines, crack cocaine, and other drugs. So it's actually closer to 80% of people who are experiencing homelessness have a lifetime drug and alcohol addiction issues. So they're off by a factor of three, which is huge. It's really, you can't imagine that someone could say that that has any real experience on the ground with this population. The second statistic that they put that was laundered through the Seattle Times, the Gene Bock, the FYI guy, the data journalist, put out a tweet saying, you know, people in Seattle think homelessness is a moral issue and we need to spend more money, period. That's what the polling data shows. And, you know, Gene Bock, the self-declared FYI guy, couldn't have gotten it more wrong, because if you look at the actual questionnaire, if you read the original polling data, you'll find that the claim they're saying is 62% of people support, believe we're not spending enough money. But if you look at the questionnaire, they only agree to that statement when it's prefaced directly by the phrase, cities the same size as Seattle are spending two or three times the amount of money that Seattle is, and they're making progress to end homelessness. Do you think we should spend more money? I mean, this is a classic push-pull manipulative tactic. And then the numbers go to 62%, but we actually have a comparison point, because 2 months earlier, the Seattle Times commissioned a poll from the same pollster that asked the same question, neutrally worded. Yes or no? Do you think do you think Seattle is not spending enough money? And only 7% of people agreed to that statement. So again, you have it misleading by a factor of 7 or 8. I mean, this is 800 times incorrect, 800% distortion of the truth. But all of these messages get laundered through the media that is complicit in this kind of disinformation campaign that was spearheaded by these organizations.
Just joining me, Christopher Rufo is on the line. He's a local activist and a writer for the City Journal, where he takes a position that we recently saw what amounts to be a massive misinformation campaign by either city officials or organizations within the city that have been in charge of homelessness while homelessness has gotten worse. And you know, you point out Gene Bock, who it feels like a few years ago he decided to go from what legitimately looked like a data journalist to just being a troll blogger who is carrying the water for some really bad progressive ideas. I mean, he doesn't hide the fact that he's got this bias anymore, and yet we're supposed to read his stuff and pretend that that bias doesn't exist. I mean, this is a guy, and I wrote about this at KTTH.com a week and a half ago. He took the position, oh, well, Seattle isn't dying. I mean, Seattle is actually so much better than it was in the 80s. And he went through all the data from the 80s. No one is talking about the 80s. Literally no one is saying, boy, I wish it was Seattle of 1987. We're literally saying Seattle has changed for the worse in the last few years. And that's what people are actually talking about.
Yeah, I mean, the framing of that question is absolutely preposterous. The question is not, is Seattle better than the past? The question is, Seattle better off than other cities comparably today? And then more importantly, can Seattle get better in the future? The question, well, crime was worse back then. So, you know, tell that to someone who's been robbed. Tell that to someone who's had their house broken into. Tell that to someone who's been the victim of an assault. It's cold comfort to say, well, you would have been assaulted twice in 1984.
Yeah.
The real question is, how can we make things better now? And rather than defensively kind of propping up the failed status quo, we should be looking at solutions. That's the real question. And Jason, I'll tell you this, you know, the most disturbing part of the story for me was that not only were this group of kind of elite billionaire foundations funding the academics, funding the writers, funding the activists, and then laundering these ideas through the media that the same groups also fund. But the fact is, they didn't disclose any of that in the reporting in many of these news outlets and stories. But the scandal really goes one step deeper. It's that all of this was done in direct coordination with Mayor Jenny Durkan's office. You know, you could see it both after the fact, because she instructed departments to put out social media posts using the Seattle Flyer hashtag. But when I grilled Pyramid Communications' Chris Nelson on this, he admitted to me, after a lot of back and forth, after some arm twisting, he admitted that this whole kind of PR disinformation campaign was coordinated directly with city and county officials. But they didn't disclose that to anyone, including the Seattle Times, which published kind of the most circulated argument on this polling data. And it's a kind of soft corruption. When you have the whole array of our city's elites, from media to foundations to business to nonprofits to academia, including the government, including the leader of our local government, colluding together to portray a message that they have to know deep down is incredibly misleading, to try to essentially persuade the public not to believe what they see with their own eyes.
Yeah, it's damage control. And we've seen from this administration that they're willing to put out fake data. I mean, last year in June, I published a piece that there was a mass exodus of cops leaving the Seattle Police Department. And then the mayor comes out and says that it's wrong. And she cites data that at the time was old. In fact, if she cited the data that was accurate at the time, it would have played into my story precisely. And then, lo and behold, a few months later, they say, oh, we do have a staffing crisis now. And it all backed up my reporting for months. So this is not surprising from them. That's what they do. It's all on display right now in Christopher Rufo's piece. If you want to check it out, city-journal.org. So city and a dash, then journal.org. Chris Rufo, thank you so much for stopping by again. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Jason. Great to talk to you.
Absolutely. Welcome back to the Jason Rant Show. I am troubled. I'm troubled for a lot of different reasons. Some of the stuff I can't really get into. Some of the stuff I'm just going to leap right in and talk about. Because apparently we now have zombie pigs.
Oh boy.
Yeah. Not zombie human beings, but zombie pigs.
And you're troubled by this.
Are you not troubled by this?
I'm indifferent.
Like the Walking Dead of pigs?
I'm very indifferent.
A bunch of reports suggest that scientists were able to revive cells in the brains of dead pigs, which now is just leading a lot of us to have questions like, wait, what does that mean? Are we in danger? The New York Times reports the brains did not regain anything resembling consciousness. There were no signs indicated coordinated electrical signaling necessary for higher functions like awareness and intelligence. But in an experimental treatment, blood vessels in the pig's brains began functioning. Oh my God. Flowing with the blood substitute, and certain brain cells regained metabolic activity, even responding to drugs. When the researchers tested slices of treated brain tissue, they discovered electrical activity in some neurons. I read this story, and the science that they're doing, this whole project, has some significant merit and implications as to the treatment of human beings. Maybe it has something to do with stopping or slowing the aging process. That would be kind of cool. I'm okay dying at a reasonable age if we don't do something that is going to create zombie pigs. Call me crazy. I don't think we need to blame God to that degree. Like, I'll go with you for a little bit in experimenting, right? In doing the whole playing God thing. Like, I'll go with you a little bit. Save me from baldness, awesome. Cure cancer, HIV, awesome. But if we're so close to the point where we have zombie pigs, for me, that's the bar that you can't go past. Got to stop just shy. Like, go all the way up to the line before you turn a pig into a zombie. That's literally my bar. And don't give me that look, because I don't think that that's asking for too much. I legitimately do not think that that's asking for too much.
Like, if there was one animal I would want to study zombie effects on, I think the first animal I would list is a pig.
But here's the problem with this. The reanimation of a pig, if you kill it, presumably the same way that you kill zombies in movies, which is shoot it or stab it or bash in its head, can you eat zombie pig carcasses?
Zombie bacon?
Like, is that
zombie
a thing?
Pork?
Does that last longer than traditional bacon? Or is it bacon that can never be eaten because it's already dead?
Well, I mean, I guess you would still have to keep it refrigerated.
The one thing I'll say about zombie pigs and the prospect of that actually coming up and reanimating, there's not that many pigs.
It's a good amount of pigs.
Not when you think about, well, listen to me for a second. Go with me on this. So a zombie human being is what? Traditionally, it's been someone who's been killed but is otherwise well-preserved.
Infected.
But they're well-preserved bodies. Maybe someone got into a car accident and they died. Maybe someone had a heart attack and they died. And then they become a zombie, so they come up. But they still have got their limbs. They're able to, depending on the series that you're watching, they either walk towards you or run towards you, right? Now, a dead pig is missing most of its body because we eat it. Now, of course, there are the pigs that die before they go to slaughter or, you know, pet pigs, I guess. But the majority of these pigs, I feel like, don't have a body, so it would just be the head, in most cases, reanimating. And then I'm okay. I suppose I should, okay, I'm going back on my word. I'm more comfortable now with zombie pigs than I was earlier. I talked myself into it, but it's not to say that I want zombie pigs.
I don't think anyone, you know, wants some. I think it's just meh. I mean, it'd be kind of cool to see him walking around, but it wouldn't change anyone's life.
You assume it's walking around and not running around trying to bite everybody.
I've never really seen a pig run.
And can a zombie animal turn a human? Because in the movies, there are no zombie animals. Like, there's no zombie dog.
Actually, there was a zombie polar bear in Game of Thrones last season, so...
But that's a fantasy. We're talking about real life.
We're talking, reality.
Yeah. Sorry. I mean, there's no animals in Walking Dead that are zombies.
I think there could be, probably. Or maybe they just ate them. I don't know.
Can I also say, for what it's worth, free press, all that, blah, blah, blah. We shouldn't be reporting this stuff because the majority of us have no idea what this is. This should not be in the New York Times. This should be, if you're going to put this out there, put it in a journal for professionals, right? For doctors and scientists who maybe will read into this and not be freaked out like literally everybody else who is on Twitter right now. Because this is freaking people out. Count me as one of them.
Why don't zombies ever eat other zombies? Why does that never happen? That seems like a major plot.
Cannibalism is wrong whenever it is. Whether we're talking about... an animated being or a reanimated being. It's wrong. You're disgusting. 1-800-465-8770. It's the Jason Rant Show.